everyone. I just wanted to welcome you back to the Rock Your Retirement Show. And I wanted to go back to the beginning and tell you what we have been doing all along since 2016. We've been talking about the six pillars of retirement lifestyle. And everything that we talk about generally falls into one of these six pillars, but many of you haven't listened from the beginning and you've probably never heard what those six pillars were. So I'm just going to outline them for you right now. So those are spiritual. What are you doing in your spiritual life? And what does that mean to you? What are your goals in that area? What about your significant other? If you have one, for many of us, this significant other relationship is key to keeping us healthy. And friendships, which is the third pillar, have to do with what we call the blue zones. If you've never read the book, The Blue Zones, it gives a lot of really good information about certain areas in the world where people live generally to be over 100 years old. The next pillar is purpose in life, because we are beings that need to know why we're here. We need to have a purpose. So one of the pillars is, what is your purpose in life? And then, of course, there's family. And then the last pillar is health. And today we are going to be spending some time talking about that pillar. And so Barbara has a little something to say before we get started. Barbara?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm having a birthday coming up and I'm going to turn 65 in just a few days. And I'm learning that that's a big deal right now. Over 4 million of us that are in my cohort that were born in 1959 are going to be turning 65 throughout this year, which at the time of this is 2024. It's the largest number in history. And all of us are going to be faced with decisions about Medicare and healthcare and all kinds of issues that we maybe haven't had to deal with yet. But today I want to share some things, but I also want to be thoughtful about the listener. And so I want to give just a bit of a trigger warning and just say that if you or someone you know or love is experiencing a healthcare issue and you're listening today right now, today's topic could be difficult for you. Kathy and I, we don't script our conversations and we make ourselves vulnerable and transparent. And foremost, we are not medical professionals. So anything you hear today is not in any way intended to be medical advice or guidance. It's our individual stories and how it's affected our families. And so our goal here is to share our situations in the hope that it will help someone make a decision, give you the tools you need. We share our lessons learned. There's lots of decision making around healthcare, and it's a lifestyle broadcast. And so if your health isn't good, then it affects what your retirement lifestyle can be. So practice self-care. If for any reason it's just too much, we are happy for you to turn us off. And then maybe at some time in the future when you're feeling better, we can continue telling our stories. Thanks.
Thanks, Barbara. I have to tell you, I started tearing up during your disclaimer because I know what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell the listener what it is we're going to talk about?
Well, we are just moved into our new house. And against that backdrop, I found finally a healthcare provider and I was referred for my annual mammogram. And I've been getting mammograms since I was in my 30s. And so every year it's kind of like, okay, here we go again. But this time I got referred back again. And emotionally, it's like, oh, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Everyone says it'll be fine. But for me, it triggers memories of my mom, who had breast cancer when she was 50 and passed away by 57. So ever since then, a mammogram for me has a much higher importance. I went back for my second mammogram, and that's where I was told that something looked irregular. And again, my family's, you know, oh, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And it's nothing that they're doing wrong when they say that, but it does kind of hurt the patient because you're going, well, wait a second. If I'm fine, why am I being referred? So I needed a biopsy. And I think because I was referred for a biopsy, I had this sense of, I need to get this biopsy. I need to get it now. And I didn't want to wait. So I spent 2 8-hour days calling and calling to get a biopsy. I got one by making friends with someone in another office miles and miles away. She had a cancellation on a Friday night, and on a Monday morning, I went in. And they removed some tissue. And with all of the diagnostic tools, you can see it's on a screen. But it looked like little grains of salt.
They said it's super tiny, or like an eraser, right? When you feel it, if you're trying to do your own breast exam.
Right. And my situation is that I would never feel it. It's in an area where there would not be a lump. And so it's surreal to see something on a screen and to not know what it is, and you feel nothing and you feel no differently.
And who's going to feel a grain of salt?
You can't. It's almost microscopic.
Right.
But thank goodness for 3D mammogram machines, because I'm sure 5 years ago with my breast type, they might not have caught it. And so it was right before we were ready to move into the house, and we were on our way to visit a friend, and we ended up spending the night with my daughter-in-law's parents. They're good friends of ours, and they were kind of on the way. And I knew that I was going to get my test results sometime that day. Well, I don't know what state you live in or if it's a federal law, but in the old days, you had to wait for your doctor to receive your test results, and then they would interpret them, and then they would get a hold of you. Well, not today. Today, the minute that test result is in, it drops into your electronic record on your own chart. And sometimes the doctor doesn't see it for 1 to 2 days because they're working. Mine dropped in at 5 a.m. And I will never forget, as long as I live, getting up, going out to the living room with my daughter-in-law's dad and mom, and reading what I was seeing. And it had horrible words like invasive, lobular, carcinoma, malignant, something called in situ, I-N-S-I-T-U. And you're just flooded with emotion because you know those words aren't good, but you don't have any meaning. So I did something I regret, which was consulting Dr. Google.
Oh, no.
Which is the absolute worst thing you can do.
But everyone's going to do that.
Because you have no context. You don't know what these words mean. And so I just felt sick at heart, just sick at heart. And so it was time to leave. And I was waiting to hear from a doctor calling me. We're driving over a mountain pass. We got to our friend's house. And that weekend is a blur. I really can't remember what we talked about or what we did. But I just began calling my tribe, my dad, my children, my friends, my family, just to say, don't know what this means, but this is what it is. And if you've been through this, you know what that sinking feeling is, and then you don't know what's coming next. And it was a tough weekend, and it was the weekend before we were moving in.
Yeah, so tough.
It's exhausting. And you don't sleep. It's just a really, really tough situation. And what I didn't understand was how triggered I'd be. It just took me all the way back to when my mom passed, when she got her diagnosis, when we got the information, and it was traumatic. And so as the days went by, then your next step is, well, how do I get a surgeon? How do I get an oncologist? And just the navigating of appointments, billing, there is a lot. And this was all on top of moving. And so I did a technique, which I encourage listeners to do, is I made friends with the people that answer the phone. Because when you're desperate for something, they are the gateway. And they're not registered nurses or breast cancer navigators or surgeons, but man, they're on the phone all the time and they hold the keys to the city. And I remember asking a lovely woman named Jennifer, I said, Jennifer, what do I do if it were you or your mom or your sister or your daughter? What would you do? And she gave me the names of a surgeon and an oncologist based on what she knew, because I just moved here. I don't know anyone. I've never had this experience. And so you just got to go through the process. So we met with the surgeon, we met with the oncologist. And what's tough about that is that they probably tell women 8 to 10 times a day that you've got breast cancer. And they're good at explaining it in terms and phrases that you can understand, but because it's so familiar, they speed up and they go so fast. So a couple pro tips. One, get your mammogram, ladies. If you've been putting it off, let my tale be a tale of caution. I do mine on time. And by catching it early, you have a better chance on all fronts. The other thing is rely on your primary care physician for questions. Dr. Google is not your friend. Finding reliable things like the American Cancer Society to kind of figure stuff out is the best way to go. One thing my doctor told me, and I'm so glad she did, she said, Barb, go buy a journal. I said, a journal. And she said, write everything down. Write what's going on with you, where are your appointments, all the information you need, and all of your questions. And I have to say, I haven't always done that because I'm not really a writer or journaler, but it has helped a lot. The other thing is, she said, take someone with you. It is overwhelming. They get about 3 or 4 words out and your just brain just floods.
And I'd like to speak from the spouse perspective, because as my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer several years ago, and from the spouse perspective, you're just, you don't know what to say. You know, there's nothing you can do. And it's really hard. You want to be supportive. But my mind just went into planning mode. Okay, we've got to do this. We've got to do that. We've got to let these people know. And I went to Google, and my husband went to Google. And one of the things that he did was we wanted to change our eating. We wanted to change the way we eat to give him a better chance of surviving. Well, and he's an engineer, so of course he's a researcher, right? And he researched for 2 years which doctor he wanted before he had his eye surgery. But we had decided that there were 2 ways of eating that sort of are good for cancer patients. And one is to go vegan. And the other is complete opposite, to basically go keto. And Les was like, well, I'm not going vegan. And so we went keto, or I should say I went keto for 2 years, and he went what he calls low carb. And I wound up having really high cholesterol. It's really affected my body from then. My cholesterol went up to, are you sitting down? 439. I didn't even know cholesterol could go that high. And so my doctor put me on statins, and we had gone on a cruise right after that to New Zealand. And I thought I was going to die while I was on that trip. I thought I'm going to have a stroke or a heart attack while I'm on this trip. But from the spouse perspective, it's really hard because you can't lift the pain. You can't lift the cancer off of the person. There is absolutely nothing you can do as a spouse. You can try to be supportive, but you have to be careful because you can't negate what the person who has cancer is going through, and you don't want to make it worse. So that's kind of my perspective from the spouse's side. And you and I had chatted for like 2 minutes before we started today, and you said you wanted me to give the spouse perspective. And so that's what I'm doing. The spouse feels lost. If I can't say as lost as the person who has the cancer, but it's also hard. It's hard for the whole family.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we had a bit of a role reversal there for a bit, because I'm usually the everything is sunshine, you know, glass half full, whatever. And he's a repairman. He's a fixer. I wouldn't call him negative, but he's practical. He's pragmatic. And when we got this news, it was the opposite. I wanted to know, okay, what's the worst case? Is it radiation? Is it chemo? Is it, you know, what is it? Surgery? And he was like, no, you're going to be fine. I believe you're going to be fine. I know you're going to be fine. They caught it early. It's going to be fine. And it has been jarring to our family and our relationship. It isn't that I went negative, but I just went, well, I want to know, how bad is this? And so starting the journal was good. Taking him with me was good. But we both flooded those first two appointments. So one piece of advice I got from my primary care physician was to take notes. Well, I have a daughter-in-law who's an RN, and she offered to take the time off to come with us to the appointment. And I just didn't feel good about that. Like, she's a busy RN. But what we did, and it was wonderful, is the doctors, the nurses, they're fine with you calling someone like my daughter-in-law while you're in the appointment. And she took notes from home on the phone, and she took them like a nurse would chart it.
Wow, and that's amazing.
When they went so fast, and it's been numerous appointments she has done this, she's been a lifesaver. She interpreted it for me. She explained it to me. She said, this is what they said. And that was the best advice I've had. So maybe you don't have a nurse in your life like I do, but there are people around you that would be happy to sit on a phone call and just write down. And the doctors, you know, asked, you know, do you have any questions? And well, her questions were wonderful.
I can tell you that there are people called care managers that for a fee, they will go to appointments. Usually it's not for someone like you or me. It's usually your parent or your grandparent, and they will go with the person on appointments, take notes, and then interpret it for you. So that service actually does exist. But you just made me think of something, Barbara. I wonder if doctors would object to you hitting the record button on your phone.
I don't think they do at all, because they understand, and I think it's easier for them. A lot of them have nurse practitioners or physician's assistants, because they only have so much time in a day, and you've got so many questions. And so I really feel like they hit the high spots, and then it's up to you to kind of ask more questions later, follow up with someone who is knowledgeable, maybe not the surgeon, maybe not the oncologist, but knowledgeable that you can ask all those questions. It's kind of a tiered thing, and you're just so overwhelmed that you don't even know what to ask. I think one thing I've learned through this, though, in these early stages, is that everything's an if-then, right? And so I wasn't prepared for the roller coaster, right? I felt like I'm on top of the world, we're moving into our house, and oh my gosh, we're down, we've got cancer. And then did blood testing and EKG and genetic testing. And again, these are days. This isn't minutes or hours. You do the test and then you wait days to find out. And so for me, there was great news that I don't have the mutation.
Fantastic.
I don't have a genetic mutation that would be an indicator for something that needed to be more involved. And I passed my EKG and everything, but there's all these things that you never knew you needed to do before you can even have your surgery. And so I'm excited about that. But then they said, well, but you need MRI because the type of cancer you have, I have invasive lobular carcinoma, is usually moves to the other breast. And
words we don't want to hear.
Words you don't want to hear. And then it can move to other connective tissues.
Right.
And so again, go through the process of getting the MRI. And I was thinking about it where my husband's saying, you're going to be okay. And why was that kind of bugging me? Because he's doing it from a place of empathy and compassion and love, trying to encourage me. But in my mind, I'm saying, but wait a second, my surgeon can't tell me I'm going to be fine.
You don't know that.
My oncologist doesn't want to be fine. So I coached him. I said, you know what you can say? You can say, I want you to be fine, honey. I need you to be fine. That's all good. But you can't tell me. Yes, you can't tell me I'm going to be fine. Because I think that when you get a diagnosis like this, and this is a real thing, it's called FCR, fear of cancer reoccurrence. Mm. And once you've got a cancer diagnosis like I have, you're the only one in the MRI machine by yourself.
Right.
It is very, very lonely when you get that diagnosis. And even though people say, think positive, you'll be fine, on your little back burner of your brain is this thing of, but what if it comes back? And then you've got to go down that whole path of, well, if and when it comes back, hopefully we'll catch it early and you'll go through treatment again. But I don't think I'll ever be normal again, if that's what, I don't think it'll go back to before. Like from this day forward, it's what's my chapter two of my life. I can't go back to before I was diagnosed with cancer. Does that make sense?
It does. So my husband's cancer was prostate cancer, and it's related to breast cancer. A lot of the treatments are similar. I don't know exactly how it works because I'm not a doctor, but he was originally diagnosed 20 some years ago, and he opted to have a therapy and he was fine. And what he did, because he's an engineer, is he tracked his PSA and he charted it and he tracked it and he found it way before the doctor did. He said to the doctor, my PSA is going up. I'd like to get a bone scan. Did I tell you this story before?
No.
He said, I want to get a bone scan. My PSA is going up. And the new urologist said, it's below 4. And he said, I don't care that it's below 4. It's way, if you look at the rate of increase, it's going up fast. And he came home and he was complaining to me. I said, honey, go to another doctor and get yourself a second opinion. And my husband has a blog about his cancer and it's public information. And so he did. He got the second opinion. And then the second doctor said, you know, I understand why the first doctor said she didn't want to order a bone scan, but I see what you're talking about. Your PSA is going up at an alarming rate. Even though it's below 4, it's still increasing very quickly. I'm going to order that bone scan for you. And then we found out on election day, 2016, that's the day we found out he had stage 4 cancer again. And I mean, I didn't know him the 20 years prior, but doctors don't necessarily know everything. And I'm glad that he took control of his own health, that he was tracking it. But why was he tracking it, Barbara? It's because of that fear of fear. What did you call it? Fear of cancer recurrence. And that's why he tracked it for 20 years. And at the time, we did go to two different oncologists. We were trying to figure out where to go. One of them said he had 3.5 years life expectancy. The other one said that he had 5 years life expectancy, and he's lived far beyond that, far beyond everything. So even if you get a bad diagnosis, the doctors do not know everything. And yes, be careful of Google, but there are certain things that you can do yourself. And Barbara, when he found out, everybody advised us not to change our eating. And I fully believe that he cut down some of his sugar. I think that extended his life. And again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. I'm not an expert. That's just my personal belief. But one other thing, Barbara, that it did is it gave him something to do because we felt helpless. And changing our diet, changing our lifestyle, increasing exercise gave him something to focus on. And it wasn't, I don't think I once said everything's going to be okay. I don't think I ever said that to him because I didn't know. But we focused on things.
I think you illustrated really well how the fear of cancer reoccurrence, once you've had an initial diagnosis, can save your life in the future. Because while it would be tempting to just put it out of your mind and be happy sunshine and I'm going to be fine and ignore the fact that it's possible it could come back, to the other extreme of being so worried, so hypochondria, getting body scans, you know, there's two extremes. It's somewhere in the middle. And in some ways, your brain when you get cancer, it's a fight or flight, right? You're like, what's happening? Danger, threat. And fear of cancer recurrence is a lot like an alarm system, right? You don't turn it off. It's a warning. And so it just makes you more vigilant about things like being aware of what's going on with your body, telling your doctor, okay, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's going on. But there is a phenomenon like what you described, because we don't know what causes cancer. We've got studies, we've got information. We don't know why we get it. But our human brain, I'm learning, wants to know and understand and wants to do something. And so exactly to your point, diet and exercise. Like if I'm eating something or drinking something or doing something that could have caused this, even though we don't know, we want the best chance of making a change. And so, yeah, along with my surgeon and oncologist, I asked for an oncology nutritionist. Who knew? There's nutritionists for people who have cancer.
Wow. And we never got that information.
Well, and I'm asking for it. So she was extremely helpful with printouts of what are some great snacks. And especially when you're looking at either radiation or chemotherapy beforehand, there are things you can do that will, you know, tide you over, but also help the treatment be a little more effective.
Good to know.
It is good to know. So you can ask for that. The other thing was accepting help from others. My doctor heard me saying, oh, I don't want to bother the kids. You know, I don't want to cause any issues, because my daughter-in-law, again, had volunteered to go to any appointment to be with us. And my doctor kind of gave me a talking to. And she said, you know, Barb, you're used to being in charge. You're used to being the problem solver. You're used to being the caregiver. You're used to being the oldest daughter. And while those roles won't change, if there was ever a time in your life to accept and receive help from others, it would be now. And that was such a good modified lecture to receive, because you start going into denial. We're fine. We're fine. We're fine. I don't need any help. Just being able to call friends. But up to the point of my surgery, we were just saying, well, Michael, just take me. And for the day of my surgery, my daughter-in-law came and sat with him and me before, stayed with him through, was there to help me get dressed when it was all done. And she made 3 crockpot meals and had the crockpot going when we got home, because it's, you know, 8 in the morning until 7 at night. I can't imagine going through this without a person like her. And the fact that we moved closer and she's 20 minutes away. It was just like, if God knew I was going to get cancer, moving us near our kids has been the best thing ever. And so accepting help from family is something that you just will have to do.
It's a blessing to them as well to mm-hmm. be able to.
Mm-hmm. 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 I'm sorry, I'm making you cry.
Just so many things. The thing is that we want to be strong and we don't want to take help, but accepting help is a blessing to the person who's giving it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to help you. They want to do something. And if God forbid you pass away or something and they felt like, well, I should have insisted that I help, they're going to maybe blame themselves a little bit. And mm-hmm. so I'm glad that you gave them that blessing of being able to bless you.
It was the right choice, no question, in hindsight. But sometimes it takes someone like a medical professional, or maybe as you're listening to this, for you to realize that, you know, you need your friends. I think the other thing was I communicated broadly with everyone, unlike my mother, who kept it all secret. And I can't even imagine how she carried years and years of a cancer diagnosis, and we really never knew until it was too late. And then we were angry that we didn't know. And I do appreciate that she didn't want anyone to treat her like she was sick or frail or dying. I get that. But I remember making a conscious choice when this happened to our family, that if I ever get, or in this case, when I get cancer, I'm going to let people know, and to the degree they want to help me. It has been interesting, different family and friends. There's kind of a thing where the first thing happens and everybody wants to know, and then it dies down. You give updates, but updating is exhausting. Everyone wanted to know, you know, how I was doing and what was going on. And then I resorted to some group texts and people are like, who are these people? Because I just didn't have the energy. I combined like family and friends or whatever. But what I've learned is that everybody has a different capacity for this. There are some people that just have an intuition and they know what you need before you need. And they'll send the card or make a call or whatever. And then other people are just not in a place in their life where they can cope with it, where you almost have to be comforting them rather than being the one that's needing to be comforted. And I guess all I can say is be merciful and gracious with each other, because everybody's in a different place. And so there's some people that have surprised me how they're showing up for this. And other people, it's like, huh, I'm not hearing from them. And I'm just like, okay, it is what it is, because I've got so many friends, so many family, so many people praying for me. I just feel like God's got me in the palm of his hand, and I don't know what the future holds, but day by day, even on the hardest days, it's been good to feel so supported. So now I'm doing that. I'm working on diet and exercise. I'm working on eating more foods that they know or believe, you know, can have a better outcome. I've been doing lots and lots of walking. And what's saving my life right now, believe it or not, is a podcast. And just like when I was searching for you for retirement lifestyle and I came on this podcast, I found one about breast cancer. I'll send you the link so you can put it in the show notes, because it is saving my life. It's called Upfront About Breast Cancer, and it's out of Australia. There's a breast cancer group there that started this podcast kind of like right pre or early pandemic for women that are dealing with breast cancer. And there's one section, probably about 10 different shows by Dr. Charlotte, who counseled people. She's a psychologist that counseled people with breast cancer. And then she herself got breast cancer. Changed, not drastically, but it changed the way she viewed it. And just like ours is about the lifestyle of retirement, not about finances, this isn't about a lot of the medical stuff. It's about the psychological impacts, the emotional, the spiritual, how you cope and how you deal with stuff. And it has been such a blessing. And so if you're someone like me that's got a recent diagnosis, it's the similar with Kathy's podcast. It's like a library. There's some things that won't pertain to you. You just skip it, but maybe the title, you know, piques your interest and go take a 40-minute walk and you will be so encouraged, so educated, so helped by understanding more about what this disease is.
You know, I just wanted to say something about what you said a few minutes ago about people who didn't reach out that you thought that they were going to reach out and blah, blah, blah. You know, when you hear such a devastating diagnosis, people like myself, you know, my social skills are not that great. And I know that, you know, I was raised, we believe that my mother has Asperger's disease or syndrome or whatever. And so this is where I am. You get what you get. When I hear something like that, I don't know what to say. And I don't want to say something that's going to make it worse. And so people like me might just stand back and kind of go, okay, well, I'm here for you, but you know, I don't want to overstep. I don't want to say something stupid. And so I tend to withdraw a little bit, not on purpose. I'm not trying to withdraw from the relationship. I'm just trying to not make it worse, if that makes sense. So there could be people like me in your life, Barbara, that there, it could be your best friend forever. And now she's withdrawn a little bit. It's not necessarily that she doesn't want to help. Maybe she just doesn't know how and doesn't want to make it worse. And so
exactly. And that's why again, mercy and grace abounds. I had one longtime friend that I texted and I didn't hear from her for days, like nothing, crickets. Huh. And I thought, well, maybe she didn't get the message or maybe she's busy, you know. And it wasn't that I was necessarily expecting anything. I was surprised. But she called me about 4 days later. She was trying to cope with the news about me and trying to get herself where she could even speak without sobbing. And that was a really good reminder to me that everybody, children, grandchildren, parents, deal with this sort of news in a different way. And there's no right or wrong way. It's just the way they're dealing with it. And so whether you're the patient or the friend, it's complicated, it's emotional, and it's okay to be who you are in that moment. It's okay to let there be quiet for a while, because I have no doubt that she loves me. None. But she needed it. And then I felt bad. I felt bad that I caused her
and you,
to
you
feel
can't
sad.
Feel bad. Right. You can't right. feel bad about that. You
no,
didn't do it
no.
on purpose. You know,
exactly.
you don't have control over that.
Exactly. And so I think just the communication at all levels with all kinds of different people is super important, to let them know what's going on with no expectation of, you know, anything coming back. And then just taking it one day at a time. So when I got this news, it was before the holidays. And I thought, okay, I need to get my surgery. I need to get it now. And it doesn't
Everyone's
work that way.
Everyone's on vacation. You know, you're
there,
not getting your
there was
surgery
no
now.
Room in the surgical ward. And so I had to go through, I had to get this news
and
as we moved in, go through Thanksgiving, go through Christmas. And my surgery is early January. And we're going to need to leave it there as kind of a cliffhanger of what happens after the beginning of 2024.
What a cliffhanger that is too, Barbara. Woo! I don't know about you, but that was very heavy for the listener. I hope that it wasn't too heavy for you. For myself, I was tearing up through the whole episode. I was glad this wasn't a YouTube video. And Barbara, we will come back and tell the listener in the next episode what happened after your surgery. So for the listener, we'll see you next time on the Rock Your Retirement Show. Bye.
Bye.